is go.
Pegasus is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot. Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Tuesday night edition of the show, 7th of September already. Good evening, Diane.
Good evening, Craig. And how are you in your new family edition?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm doing fine. The new family edition is doing fine. He got a little vocal. The little puppy dog got a little vocal today. Today was actually, I guess, technically day two. You know, we picked him up yesterday.
That's true. And people, we're not talking about a kid here. We are talking about a four-legged puppy.
Yeah. Barkley. And but you know what? He's doing really good. He made a little trip down to the park today and walked around the park. Susan took him down there this afternoon, walked him around, trying to wear him out so he sleeps again. He slept really good last night, his first night here. We're hoping he sleeps again tonight, but I'm not counting on it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, okay. He get a little vocal. I've tried, you know. It's hard. It's really hard not to just get up and run in there and pick him up and everything. But I'm trying to teach him that just because he cries or yowls or whatever it is he's doing, you know, he's not running the show. He's got to get used to being, I guess for better, lack of a better term, ignored a little bit so that he learns to deal with things on his own.
Well, he's only 8 weeks old, so cut him some slack.
I cut him some slack last night. That's the end of that. You know, from here on out, he's got to learn stuff.
Yeah. You're going to teach an 8-week-old puppy at that age to learn to behave.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
I guess you live in another world.
Well, I do. On my planet, it works that way. I don't know.
Okay. Well, your planet's a little strange to begin with.
he's actually only 7 weeks old, so.
Oh, he's only 7. Okay.
He's only 7 weeks old. He's already a good-sized puppy. He's black lab.
Yeah, he looks bigger than, you know, the 10 pounds you're saying.
Yeah, he might be. He might be closer to, I don't know, 12. 12 pounds?
15
I don't know.
Even. He looks chunky.
He is. But, you know, it's hard to tell at this age. Is he going to stay that way? Is he going to be a monster, you know, size-wise? Is he going to lean out some as he gets a little older? We don't know. We'll wait and see.
I predict he's going to be a big boy. I look at the paws, and that puppy has big paws.
He's got paws the size of saucers.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that is no slack little puppy.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you the funny thing. The funniest part of this whole thing up to this point is the way the other critters in the house are reacting. Bella, the other dog in the house, she's fine. You know, until Barkley tries to give her a kiss, then Bella jumps back like, oh, what was that?
Okay.
Mallory, Cat 1, Mallory, is above it all. She doesn't care.
That's nothing. Because she's the princess.
She is the princess. Nothing fazes her. She just walks right past him like, you know, big deal.
Hey, you're Kitty, she's the princess. My Gemma is the queen of all queens.
Our cat number 2, you know, she, Misha, she's a little bit apprehensive, but she's okay. I mean, she, you know, she understands this is her new brother and, you know, and everything. But, you know, it's like, really? You know, she kind of got that, really? You brought that in the house? Really?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And now, that's what happens when I bring a new cat and the others look at my, you know, like, does this really have to stay here? Can it go elsewhere?
Yeah, see, that's Misha. Now, the third cat, okay, Monty, he's the youngest, right? Now, he's pretty much all white. Barkley is all black, and Monty is about as scared as an Irishman would be in Harlem right now.
Oh, my God. Hey, well, you've got a nice, you meet the criteria of multicolored household.
We do. We've got it all, you know. So, but everything's fine, and you know, Barkley, he's kind of coming out of his shell a little bit this afternoon. He's all tuckered out now, and I hope he stays that way. So,
yeah, we'll if he has to bark, Barkley, if you have to bark during Craig's segment, not mine.
Right, right, exactly. Well, he's you know, Susan's got him right now, and. You know, so hopefully there won't be any yapping interruptions tonight.
True.
Can't promise that down the road. Can't promise that down the road because you never know. Folks, got to tell you right off the bat here that Friday Night Show is a 9/11 tribute show.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, 20 years. It is a big deal whether some on the other side like it or not. It's not to the statute, let's say, of the 25th, which is a quarter of a century. That is going to be a real big deal. But the 20th is right up there. And I'm just afraid something might happen again that day.
I know. I think we're all kind of...
I'm not saying here, but I'm somewhere.
Somewhere.
Because of Biden and his horrific way he pulled us out of Afghanistan, and with the Taliban now setting up their new government and not keeping the promise that they gave before we pulled out, they're stacking their new government with people on our terrorist list.
Yeah, shocking,
so
right?
We need to have eyes and ears open here.
Well, I think everybody's kind of collectively holding their breath as we, you know, head towards 9/11 this weekend. So, you know, hopefully we'll get through this. But, you know, no guarantees. But Friday show, a tribute to 9/11. It's a one-hour show, and it's all going to be about 9/11. Kind of looking back. At 20 years ago, the past 20 years, and kind of remembering our, you know, our own stories of 9/11. So that'll be an interesting show, and I hope folks will tune in for that on Friday night, 7 o'clock, right here at rspradio1.com. Now, later this evening, we're both dealing again with Afghanistan. Diane, you've got Leaving Americans and Others Behind.
Yes.
Okay, and yep. My segment is A Coup from Behind the Curtains.
Okay.
Okay, so that's what we're going to deal with a little later, but let's start with some quick hitters tonight. There's some interesting stuff out there. Senator Rand Paul now has public documents, okay? These just recently went public that proved that Fauci was lying in front of Congress regarding funding COVID-19 research.
Right, and what he's got is the 900 pages of documents dealing with the work of EcoHealth Alliance, which, folks, is a U.S.-based health organization that's kind of tied in with Fauci, and that they did indeed use federal money to fund that coronavirus research at the Chinese laboratory. We have the proof.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Diane, and I'm sure you won't correct me because I know I'm not. So it's kind of a rhetorical thing here, but sure seems to me that very early on, as this whole COVID thing started ramping up, you put an op-ed out there mentioning Echo Research.
Yes, I did, right in the beginning, and everybody was like, huh?
Who?
What is she talking about? Who is that? Well, guess what, guys? I told you this was coming many, many, many months ago.
How many times do I have to tell people, you got to pay attention to what we talk about on this show and what we put in our blogs, because we're ahead of the game so
often.
Yeah,
because we step back and look at the big picture. We don't focus on what others want us to focus on. We step back, we look at the entire scenario. The case against Fauci is there. It just has to be put together correctly. And for someone, I never liked Rand Paul before, but now I'm getting a new respect for him because he is kind of leading the charge against Fauci and Echo Health and all the other things going on with coronavirus. So I have new respect for him.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rand Paul is a little bit, at this point, he's a little bit like a pit bull on a pork chop.
Yeah.
Okay, because he's been screaming this from the rooftops for months. Well, now he's got the 900 pages of documents that prove he was right and Fauci was lying.
Exactly. But we beat even Rand Paul with this.
But you know what? You know what?
I mean,
nothing's going to happen.
Go back in my blogs and Craig's blogs, and I have a whole section, COVID. I grouped it into one section. It's right on the top. You can see the dates.
Yeah.
The dates prove, you know, what we're saying is true, that we put this together. Maybe not before Rand Paul, because maybe he was working on this before we actually put together an article, but it never came out before.
Nothing's going to happen to Fauci. So don't anybody get your hopes up. Nothing's going to happen to him because... you know, the Biden DOJ isn't going to prosecute him for lying to Congress. It's not going to happen.
Well, you know, there's no statute of limitations with that. If the House switches in 2022, all cards are off the table.
Not
necessarily. And you might very well see people being called to task for Afghanistan, for coronavirus, for the border.
Well,
it's key that we get that House back.
Yeah, but I'll correct you on one thing. Just because we get the House back, and I think we will, I honestly do, but just because we get the House back doesn't mean any charges will be brought. There will be an investigation, but the House cannot charge or put somebody on trial.
Right, right. No. I know that. But at least an investigation could be started. Stuff could be brought out to the public. And if enough people demand certain things and we have the right person as the Speaker of the House, they brought charges against Trump, we can bring them against this administration.
I would love to see it. I would love to see it, but I'm not going to hold my breath. Down in Texas, the great state of Texas, the Lone Star State of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott has signed the voter integrity bill. Now, folks, this was the bill that all the Democrats got on a private plane without their masks, but they did have a case of beer, and they flew off to New York running away from Texas so they wouldn't have to hold a vote on this voter integrity bill. Well, that backfired. They stayed in Texas for a couple of months. They hid out like a bunch of cowards, and they finally came back. The vote was held. It passed, and now Greg Abbott has signed it into law.
Right. And basically what this law does is it ensures every eligible voter gets to vote, eligible meaning with proof. It adds more hours to vote, makes it harder for fraudulent votes to be cast, and makes ballot harvesting a third degree felony. Basically, what it does is makes it easier to vote. You have your voter IDs and all that, but it makes it much harder to cheat.
Well, one of the other things, you know, you mentioned, you know, you have to be a valid voter, you know, to be able to vote. Another thing this does really is that it requires you as a voter to be able to fog a mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of key, wouldn't you think?
You know, because let's face it, there's a lot of dead people that have been voting and they all vote Democrat, every one of them.
I know. But you know what's worse about all this? No matter what they do, no matter this law, as good as it is, they're still going to find a way to cheat. What you have to do, unless somebody is in the hospital, totally infirm, a total shutdown, a wounded veteran, you cannot have mail-in ballots. That's where most of the fraud occurs, is in the mail-in ballots. You can stack them, you can harvest them, you can run them 2, 3, 4 times through the machines. No one's going to know.
Right.
So you've got to do away with mail-in ballots. And also, I hate to say it, but we're in violation of the Constitution. The Constitution says there must be one designated date a year. It doesn't say 3 months before. You know, I even did an article about that, and I cited all the wording in the Constitution. Legally, it's one day, folks. If you can't give up one day of work or your social life for something as important as an election, then maybe you don't deserve to vote.
It never used to be a problem. Everybody voted on election day.
Right.
I don't understand why it takes 1, 2, maybe 3 months now to get people to vote. That's ridiculous. You know,
because
I'll tell
that's where the fraud comes in.
Well, of course it is. But I'm saying there is no legitimate reason why it should take 3 months to hold a vote. And I'll tell you what. If it gets right down to it, what they ought to do, and I've been an advocate on this for years, what they ought to do is make Election Day a national holiday.
Oh, yeah. I've been saying that as well. No work. You get paid from your job because it would become a federal, I'll use the word holiday, but it's not really a holiday. It's almost like you're doing your civic duty. We have a duty to vote. That's what our military died for our vote to be sacred, to be cast once. Each person gets one vote, and people underground don't get to vote.
Well, there you go, taking all the fun out of it for Democrats.
I know, it's a shame, you know, lifelong conservatives are now voting in death Democratic.
I know. Yeah, they're spinning in their graves like lathes, too, I can tell you.
I know. It's sad.
It is sad. It's kind of ridiculous when you get right down to it. But congratulations to Governor Abbott in Texas. Got the job done, and, you know, now the Democrats, they got a lot to cry about in Texas this week, don't they?
Yeah, they sure do.
I mean, they're going to be severely stifled on cheating the vote. And, you know, now the heartbeat bill down there in Texas has been allowed to stand. And they don't know whether to crap or go blind down there. I mean, Democrats, they're just chasing their tails now.
And, you know, I wrote about this heartbeat bill for the past couple of years. And what the heartbeat bill is based upon is not that life begins at conception, but that life begins when a beating heart beats. A human being cannot be alive without a beating heart. That's the premises behind the heartbeat bill. And Craig, if you remember, before this brouhaha even started, when you and I were talking one day having a conversation, when does life begin? Who's the one that said when the heart starts beating?
Yeah.
Because without a heart, we're just a parasite until a heart is what keeps us alive. We cannot live without a heart.
I don't know. I'm not sure parasite would be the word I'd use, because let's face it, most liberals are parasites their entire life.
True, but when you think of it this way, and I don't mean it as an insult, a developing baby is feeding off its mother through the umbilical cord and all that. That is a parasitic action.
So is feeding off the government for your whole life. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, feeding off the government your whole life is called a free ride.
Yeah, well, still, it's parasitic.
True. You know. But not all parasitic things are bad.
No, but the liberals are. And I'll stand by that.
That goes without saying.
Well, then why did I say it, for goodness sakes? No, I have no idea. You know, we mentioned a couple of minutes ago that this Friday's show is all about 9/11. Well, 9/11, you know, it's coming up on Saturday, and a son of a woman who was killed in the World Trade Center on 9/11 was on Fox and Friends this morning, and boy, oh boy, did he let loose on Biden.
Right, his name is Nick Harris Jr., his 76-year-old mother, Frances. She died on 9/11, buried in the building. They never found her remains, so the family has no closure, even though they know that she's gone, of course. But he actually said that Biden has no right to be there. His exact words, and this was the message he sent to Biden. Okay, he said, "Yes, Joe, some people did something. I am demanding that President Biden dare not show his face at Ground Zero on 9/11 because he has no place there."
Well, and then he went on
to state, after what he did in Afghanistan, they don't want him. The 9/11 families do not want him there on Saturday.
And he went on to say that Biden is the killer in chief.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yep.
He's right. But I mean, you know, I mean, he went off on Fox and Friends this morning like gangbusters. And now let me ask you. Let me ask you, Diane, what do you think is going to happen if Biden shows up at Ground Zero this Saturday? What do you think is going to happen?
I think it might be a deliberate action that Biden shows up there, because there will be trouble. And then the Democrats can use this. Look at this, these Republicans, these supposedly compassionate people. This is the president, and look how they're acting. They're booing this, that, whatever. But I hate to tell people, at the 10th anniversary of 9/11, of which I was there, Obama was booed.
And rightly so.
And rightly so. There could be trouble there on Saturday, but I don't think Biden has the physical capability to be there, honestly.
I you know, if he's there, is he going to speak? Because, boy, that's dangerous. Okay, because
I don't know. What's a tornado?
Yeah.
I mean, no.
You know, I mean, you can't
he could be there.
You can't prop him up and have him speak at a thing like that, because, you know, he's gaffe prone to begin with. He's suffering from dementia, and the combination of those two things, you don't know what is going to come out of his mouth. So does he show up and
They could do a pre-recorded message that they edit and put it up on big jumbotrons.
Boy, I'll tell you,
those were around on the 10th anniversary.
I hope that doesn't happen. I mean, you know, that guy just needs to stay away, period. I don't care if he's, you know, in person. I don't care if it's virtual. He needs not to have any presence there at all.
Yeah. But this was a great line this morning. He said, "Today I call out Biden as the killer in chief. Biden would be complicit in a coming genocide against Afghans and Americans left behind in Afghanistan, and he has promoted infanticide in the United States.
Well, there
he
kind of
covered all bases there.
He did. He did. He got it in on live TV, so good for him. Finally, in the quick hitters tonight, speaking of Biden, he is all set to go campaigning in California for Governor Newsom.
Yeah. The probably, next to Cuomo, probably the worst governor in this whole country. And I say, even though, you know, everybody thinks Californians want him out and this and that, you're talking about La La Land out there. I bet by some way Newsom gets to keep his job.
I almost guarantee it. And I'll tell you this. If he does keep his job, then Californians are going to get exactly what they deserve. Their economy is going to tank 100%. That place is going to wind up being a crap hole state. If they keep him in office,
keep them behind the wall, right?
If they keep him in office, they're going to get exactly what they deserve.
Yes, this is, you know, Kamala's there this way campaigning. You know, here it is. Our economy is not doing well. We're still in the midst of the Afghan debacle because Americans and allies are being left behind. We got 9/11 coming up, and these two idiots are campaigning for a disgraced governor. They're not doing the people's business, that's for sure. Maybe that's a good thing, but they're not doing the people's business. They're out campaigning for a scumbucket.
Well, the guy has already wrecked the economy out there.
Yes.
Okay. You know, the fire situation out there, they can't get a grip on that. Crime in California is skyrocketing. Newsom's doing nothing to get a handle on that. It's, you know, gas. My God, gas prices out there the other day were over, I want to say it was over $5.50 a gallon.
I think it was even higher than that.
It may have been six. Yeah, it may have been up to $6 a gallon. I mean, good Lord. You know, California's got the highest gas tax of any state in the country. And, you know, they got excessively high taxes. Their unemployment rate in California is dismal. At this point, the economy is wrecked. I mean, good Lord. If they keep him, they're getting exactly what they deserve.
Well, the problem is there's too many Republicans in the mix trying to run against him. That's a problem. Everybody should have united behind Larry Elders because the others, come on, you want Bruce Jenner in a dress as your governor?
Yeah, I know. I can't take the guy seriously. I just can't. The other people that are running on the Republican ticket, who the hell are they?
Yeah. Although I will say, Bruce Jenner is, he's really a conservative on the important issues. If you've heard some interviews with him, he did a fairly long interview with Judge Jeanine. And, I mean, she was even looking at him like, you know, But some of the things he was saying were along our lines of thinking. He might have been a viable president if he stayed governor, I'm sorry, if he had stayed Bruce Jenner, because I hate to tell him, Brucey, you're genetically still Bruce. You ain't Caitlin.
Right. Yeah, well, we'll see how it all shakes out. That's coming up pretty quick. You know, but I got a 99% belief that Newsom remains the governor of California when it's all said and done.
I hope we're both wrong.
I hope we are, too. I love to see Larry Elder be the governor of California. I really would.
Absolutely.
You know,
but I'm not going to hold my breath for it. But, you know, even if he loses, I think this is a start of a decent political career for him.
Well, I think so, and I'm a little torn on that, honestly, because he's also a great talk radio host.
Yeah, he is, but you know, we need to clean out the swamp.
Yep.
And these new people coming in, it's a start.
It is. It is. Well, we've gotten to the bottom of the hour here. That means the end of the segment. We got to move on. Take a little break here. Get the station IDs in. When we come back, Diane's got it with Leaving Americans and Others Behind. A little bit later in the show, half an hour from now, I've got it with A Coup from Behind the Curtain. So stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's long-time Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. If you miss any part of tonight's show, don't worry, you can become one of the pod people. All you have to do tomorrow morning is go to rspradio1.com, click on the podcast button. Podbean hosts all of our podcasts, and this show will be there in its entirety. All right, Diane, so for your op-ed, you have taken on Leaving Americans and Others Behind.
Yes, and let's start by saying it's over. Or is it? Only time will tell, but for now, American troops have come home. Not in tangible defeat, per se, for we were not militarily defeated, but defeated in that they're sense of purpose was negated by the powers that be, who would not allow them to fight to win. Winning hearts and minds once again prevented our troops from rendering the enemy dead, just like it's politics alone that sees us leaving American citizens behind to face what is an unthinkable fate, with the media still not calling the guilty to task. But before I get into that, let's turn the clock back a bit to roughly 2 weeks ago, when President Trump was still being blamed by Mr. Blood on His Hands Joe Biden for the Afghan debacle. 2 weeks ago, when American heroes bravely fought on in the guise of an all-volunteer group of U.S. Afghan veterans who launched a daring and dangerous mission behind Biden's and the State Department's back, a mission they called the Pineapple Express, to not only bring some of our at-risk Afghan allies and their families to safety, but who unofficially worked with our military to get these folks into Kabul's airport and onto planes leaving the country. In fact, this mission was actually underway during the suicide car bomb attack at the airport that left over 200 people dead, including 14 members of our military, 13 killed instantly and another dying from his wounds, and close to 200 Afghans who desperately wanted to get out before their country was under total Taliban control. And while some of those who made it into the airport were injured during the terrorist attack, with possibly even a few of them being amongst the now dead, in this case, the media gave little mention to the heroic actions of these brave Afghan war veterans who risked their lives to help those who had helped them. Sad indeed, but not unexpected from a leftist media all snuggled up cozy in the Democrats' anti-American pocket. But the media, in an all-out effort to cover for Joe Biden's self-made withdrawal disaster, did make it 24/7 news when, in retaliation for said airport attack, a U.S. drone attack in Afghanistan's Nangarhar province near the Pakistan border took out two ISIS-K terrorists, one a planner and the other a facilitator. And then 2 Sundays ago, another military drone struck a vehicle in a residential neighborhood of Kabul, a vehicle packed with explosives, preventing what was intel deemed to be an imminent attack on the airport by yet another ISIS-K suicide bomber. And this, Craig, was another propagandized media coup committed by the most extreme and violent of all the jihadist militant groups now operating in Afghanistan.
You know, when that supposed drone attack took place on the two ISIS-K guys, that kind of reminded me, in a way, of when Obama used to, you know, drop bombs on an empty couple of trucks in a parking lot somewhere. So how does this retaliation stack up against the actual suicide bombing, or does it?
Well, you know, the coverage of these limited in scope retaliations, I guess, is better than no retaliations at all. But they do not make up for all those killed at the airport, nor does it excuse the Fourth Estate for not reporting the truth about Joe Biden's disaster of a withdrawal that should have never happened, along with their defending and trying to make excuses for Biden's show of disrespect when the bodies of our 13 brave warriors returned home. After all, Joe Biden did indeed keep looking at his watch as if bored, while never once taking off his mask to at least show a modicum of respect for those whose deaths add even more blood to his already bloodied hands. Quote, "The Taliban saying is, you have the watches, but we have the time. What a sad piece of evidence that is more true than ever before. Many of them said he didn't just do it once. He did it with almost every single family, as if, come on, folks, is this over yet?" End quote. That was said by Afghan Army veteran and Fox and Friends weekend co-host Pete Hegseth. So, if Joe Biden thinks that a few dead terrorists, coupled with our troops being forced to depart from what should have been a winnable theater of war, will now wipe some of the blood off his hands, it does not, just like it didn't when he was Obama's VP during the Benghazi fiasco. And with the mainstream media and numerous Pentagon officials continuing to throw a blanket over Joe Biden's ineptitudes as well as his ineffective presidency, they also ignore facts that equate to his, quote, aiding and abetting the enemy. And those actions include not only his giving the Taliban a list of American citizens and Afghan allies that, quote, needed to be granted entry into the outer perimeter of the airport, but the fact that Biden, in his capacity as commander-in-chief, along with General Kenneth McKenzie, commander of the U.S. Central Command, went along with the Taliban's putting the Haqqani Network's Khalil Haqqani, a U.S.-designated terrorist with a $5 million bounty on his head, in charge of the security in Kabul itself and at the airport. and known to Biden, or at least it should have been, is that the Hikwani Network has a long history of working with al-Qaeda, the very terrorist group Biden erroneously claimed was no longer in Afghanistan. Simply, Craig, a U.S. president and a top general actually tasked the enemy with handling security at the very airport where now 14 U.S. troops and almost 200 Afghans were killed by an ISIS-K suicide bomber. And to me, those are traitorous actions indeed.
Absolutely, those are traitorous actions. But, you know, you think back in history and how this all started was, you know, chasing Osama bin Laden through Afghanistan, right? Well, Bill Clinton was offered Osama bin Laden on a silver platter and turned it down. Do exactly. we have anything that equates to that happened with Biden in this Afghanistan debacle and disaster?
Oh, we sure do have them, and it just continues the military blunders of the very worst kind, including Biden's declining the Taliban's offer to have U.S. troops control Kabul during the evacuation, coupled with what was, quote, reckless endangerment of both our military and American citizens. And those things will now and forever be Joe Biden's legacy, the legacy of a man both mentally and physically incapable of being commander in chief. And this should be obvious to all and not be a partisan driven issue, as both Republicans and Democrats should demand that the leader of the free world portray strength, power, and clear and logical thinking to help reassure those in harm's way that American ideals are worth fighting for. But with Biden not being cognizant enough to know simple right from wrong, it was easy for his puppet master to manipulate him into giving the Taliban, the enemy, what amounted to a kill them now or round them up to be hostages later list of those persons he obviously deemed to be disposables. And Biden's claim that this, what was a most foolish of strategies, was not just the best way to keep both Americans and Afghans safe, but would help to expedite the evacuation of tens of thousands of people, also saw him claiming that this action alone would prevent a shooting war between Taliban fighters and U.S. troops. Really, Joe? I think not. For only those disloyal to our country would dare dream up, and I'm saying read Obama here, and then get a weak mind to initiate such nonsense. And why exactly do I say this? Because there's no other reason for an American president and his top military brass to not only supply the Taliban with the names of our people, to share intelligence information with those we are at war with, and to have our military leave Bagram Air Base, our key base of operations in Afghanistan, in the dead of night without notifying the Afghans, while at the same time leaving most of our military equipment behind, making it ripe for the Taliban's picking. And pick they did, as the Taliban are now, according to some reports, hiring under the threat of killing their families, former Afghan Army pilots, to fly their now appropriated U.S. Black Hawk helicopters, from which they're hanging their fellow Afghans still loyal to the Ghani government or those unfortunates who were left behind after having aided our military. And even Joe Biden, deep in the throes of dementia, has to know on some level that in his aforementioned aiding and abetting of the enemy, that he is not the one running the show, for he is mentally not capable of coming up with the very decisions that sold our country out. And while in his almost 50-year political career, Joe Biden was always power-hungry and greedy, I never thought of him as being a traitor. Well, I always considered Obama to be just that, Craig, a traitor with an anti-American agenda who latched on to the one man he could unequivocally control.
Well, that's, yeah, there's no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt about that. Now, given what we've seen and you know, the state of the state, I guess, for, mm-hmm. you know, State of the Union, maybe, for lack of a better, you know, term in this thing, where are we at with this? Because the media is complicit in this. Biden is obviously complicit in this. Where are we? I mean, when you boil this whole thing down, at some point, Obama's name just keeps coming up because even he has made public references to what we're seeing now.
Right. Well, let me start by saying, you know, come on, folks. You all know as well as I do that Obama's pulling the strings. For what we see unfolding with our military coming home in defeat tells us all we need to know. For no true patriot, no matter their party, would ever allow this Afghanistan nightmare to have happened. And the media knows this is truth and has known it all along. Yet they became willing accomplices in America's fall. In fact, one case in point can be seen via a June interview with the New York Times columnist Ezra Klein, where Obama himself clearly stated that he sees Joe Biden as a, quote, continuation of his own presidency, end quote, and that, quote, Joe and the administration are essentially finishing the job, end quote, the job of destroying America from within, that is. And with the majority of what was Obama's people continuing to work within the Biden administration, Obama's socialist, anti-America, and military defaming policy continue on with Biden's grossly mismanaged withdrawal from Afghanistan, proving just that. And while Obama is not the visible front man, even though he's actually hiding in plain sight, no, he is the puppet master, for it was he who withdrew almost all U.S. troops from Afghanistan when, as president, he did so with little to no regard for Afghan security, the resurrection of the Taliban, or for the expansion of ISIS. So, while Biden did not finish his hoped-for task, Joe Biden is finishing his job, as he said. And it's a job started when, as President Obama made nice to the Taliban with his announcing our first date of withdrawal back on June 22, 2011, thus making it he and he alone who set the stage for the Taliban's ultimate return to power, with Joe Biden bringing down the curtain, so to speak, what with his announcing our non-negotiable August 31st withdrawal date for the whole world to see and hear. So now as the massive airlift out of Afghanistan is over and done, with as many Americans as who wanted to leave having left, Joe Biden's lying words constantly being mimicked by the media, we believe behind an unknown number of American citizens, a large number of our Afghan allies, a number of British nationals, and many others, including some of our own brave, hardworking, four-legged canine warriors who served at America's side in the war on terrorism, a war that still sees no end in sight. And with Biden's recent ever-so-misguided words that it was time to turn the page on the U.S. role abroad and turn it towards a, quote, less interventionalist future, thus ending an era of major military operations to remake other countries, I guess, for him, bringing freedom and democracy to oppressed people is to Joe Biden not a worthy task. But the saddest thing of all is that our mission in Afghanistan ended as it began, with the Taliban in control. And so I say, may God bless our military who truly fought a good and righteous fight. May God bless and keep safe those Americans and Afghan allies still left behind. Case closed.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as this thing unfolds, Diane, and we learn more every day, literally, it just gets worse and worse. This whole situation just gets worse and worse.
Yeah. In fact, Glenn Beck, and everybody knows who Glenn Beck is, the Blaze, and he was Fox commentator before they booted him off. He sent, with his own money, planes over there to get Americans and Afghans. And you know, the administration wouldn't allow him to do it.
I know. It's It's like, come on. You know, you're
everything
not doing
was
it.
Ready to get the Americans and the Afghan allies out of there on his dime. And Biden and crew said no.
I'm telling you right now, there is not one single thing happening in Afghanistan today that the Biden administration doesn't want to happen there.
Well, the Obama administration part three.
That's right.
You know, let's really, folks, you know it. Craig and I know it. Biden is not capable of running the show. He can't even get up there and read a prepared statement anymore. So somebody has to be pulling his strings. Well, all fingers point to Obama. These are his policies. He set this whole thing in motion. There could be nobody else. Obama is the money. Soros is the purse.
That's it. And you mentioned in this op-ed, which, by the way, folks, you can get in two places. You can get it at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or rspradio1.com. Either way, get the link and share it everywhere. But you mentioned in this op-ed, Diane, about Obama initially pulling troops out of Afghanistan. But, you know, and I understand that, you know, length of an op-ed is, you know, can be limiting sometimes. But let's not forget that before Obama started pulling those troops out of Afghanistan, he took their bullets away.
Yeah, he tied our military's hands behind their back to win the hearts and minds of the people.
Right, which is just a slick way of saying to get themselves killed.
Exactly. Better Americans get killed than the enemy gets killed. This is in Obama's mind because I don't care what anybody says. Obama is the head enemy within. He remains it to this day.
Well, you know, you couldn't be on a base in Afghanistan in the Obama regime and have bullets in your gun. That just wasn't, you know, allowed. And then we had that, you know, green blue violence. I mean, that was just a cover up for, you know, Americans without ammo are getting killed. Right. That's all that was.
Right. Here it is. Our military trains for missions like this, and then to get over there and not allowed to be what you're trained for, especially in the war on terror. Here it is. This Taliban, we kept them under control for 20 years. Biden opens his big mouth and gives the withdrawal date, and all hell breaks loose.
Well,
Put two and two together, folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting pretty crystal clear, and I'm going to get into some of that here in just a little bit. You know, and I'm going to continue on that line next Tuesday. Because the more we see and the more that comes out in this, the worse and worse and worse it gets.
Absolutely. And while you're going to continue on with Afghanistan next week, I'm going back to the only other news story.
God, COVID?
We got two news stories, folks. I'm going back to COVID, specifically to the vaccine. There is something that is not being told to the American public. I have the medical facts. I have checked them with numerous doctors and healthcare workers. And it's facts that need to be gotten out there. There is a reason these breakthroughs are happening in people who have the vaccine. And I'm going to tell you exactly what it is and why it is.
Now, I got to tell you, folks, I've had a sneak preview of that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to miss next Tuesday's show.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you right now.
Think twice. If you haven't got the jab, don't get it, in my opinion.
I mean, You're going to find out next Tuesday, folks. You're going to find out.
Actually, it'll be published Monday. So if you go to my blog or, you know, any of the venues that I'm on, you can read it and you're going to go, oh, my God.
You know, meanwhile, we got the Mu variant now.
Yeah, M-U. Yeah. They couldn't come up with a better name than Mu.
I'm not sure if this is the Mad Cow variant, you know, or the Michelle Obama variant. I'm sorry. But go ahead.
Maybe they named it after the Mu. Maybe they named it after the Mu Obama.
That's Michelle. That's what I was just saying before you jumped in on me. I said I don't know if this is the Mad Cow variant or the one they named.
Well, no, actually, what happened
again? Okay, I said I don't know if this
actually, what happened is we've got a little popping here. That's what happened.
Okay, I tried four times to get it out. So it's apparently popping every time in the exact same place. But never mind. Look, folks, get this article that Diane's got out right now. Go to thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or go to rspradio1.com. Doesn't matter which place you get it, it's the same link, and then share that link everywhere you possibly can. The more we can get the truth out as to what's happening, the better.
Yeah. It's better for everyone, and it's better for our country. Because things are not going to get better until people say, we've had enough. It's time for action. We're not talking, you know, starting military action here. We're talking 2022 is coming up. We can get rid of these people in 2022. We can render the Democrats impotent by retaking the House and really getting a gain in the Senate.
Well, and let's hope that happens. I mean, seriously. You know, something's got to change. Something's got to give.
Yes.
So let's work towards 2022, folks. That's really all we got right now.
Yes, it is.
All right, so we're just a couple of minutes early here, but you know what? Let's go ahead and take the top of the hour break and get the old station IDs in there. Remember, folks, if you missed any part of the show tonight, all you got to do is go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning and click the podcast button. You're one of the pod people. You don't even have to sign up to be a pod person. You just have to click the button.
Right.
You know, it's pretty simple.
We don't require anyone to sign in or join anything.
No, it's all there. It's all there for you. And while you're there, feel free to kind of thumb through the rest of the pages on the website, because we got fresh news.
We update them every day.
Yeah. Fresh news. Come and get it. Fresh news. That's what we do. All right, folks. So stick with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth.
This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot. Diane Sorey right over there at the Patriot Factor, getting you through a Tuesday night edition of the show. One segment to go, Diane.
Yep.
Just one.
Let's get at it.
Well, we're both taking on Afghanistan tonight, and the situation there is becoming crystal clear, and usually when things clear up, it's a good thing. In this case, no, it's just getting worse. All right, since the beginning of the disaster in Afghanistan, which has left blood on Joe Biden's hands, Biden has attempted to project blame onto President Trump. Biden says he takes responsibility, but it's all Trump's fault because Trump had a deal with the Taliban to remove all of our troops by May 1st of this year. According to Biden, there was nothing he could do. He was handcuffed by Trump's deal. He had no choice. Those are abject lies. First of all, if Biden was so handcuffed that he had no way out of the deal, so constrained by the deal that he had no choice but to comply with it, why then did the deal show a date of May 1st, and the calendar now shows that the final bloody debacle began to take place in late August? Obviously, Biden was not constrained by the deal Trump had with the Taliban, and we know this not only by checking the calendar, but because Biden reset the date, and did so arbitrarily. The September 1st date was set by Joe Biden, and it was picked out of thin air. It was just a date with no conditions attached to it. What makes matters even worse is the fact that Biden's date extended the timeline for the Taliban and other terrorist groups in Afghanistan, and that only aided those terrorist groups. There is a fighting season in Afghanistan. I know it sounds odd, but it really is. It doesn't make sense, but it is nonetheless true. Due to weather and economic conditions in Afghanistan, the fighting season runs from late April through October. Diane, that's the most important distinction because according to Trump's deal with the Taliban, the withdrawal of America's presence in Afghanistan was to have taken place at the end of the non-fighting season, or maybe to be more specific, before the various groups of terrorists could ramp up their efforts for the new fighting season.
Well, also there was another little picadillo in there about the date. Biden, or should we say Obama, wanted us out before September 11th for obvious reasons.
Right. You're absolutely right. According to the date picked by Joe Biden for our withdrawal, the fighting season would be in full swing, with various Islamic factions of terrorist entities being fully ramped up for strikes. While we certainly cannot expect a dithering fool like Biden to have been cognizant of such a detail, we should expect his generals on the ground, his generals and upper-level brass at the Pentagon, and the Biden Department of State to have been fully aware of the timing elements for withdrawal, and you can bet your last dollar that Biden's puppet master, Obama, has more than a situational awareness of that timing. When one considers those simple facts, it appears that September 1st withdrawal date may not have been so arbitrary after all. As I have stated in previous commentaries, the military brass in top-level positions, both on the ground and in the Pentagon, did nothing to avert the dire situation that Biden, or perhaps more likely Obama's new withdrawal date, invited. They had to know what was happening and what would happen, and yet they simply carried on as though there were no problem at all. It's not enough to say that they were just following the orders of their commander-in-chief, because in such a dire situation and in such an obvious run-up to an impending and all-too-predictable disaster, if their objections to the new timeline were not being listened to, if they were being ignored, they could have and should have resigned. But they didn't. Why not? Well, is it possible that they were more loyal to Obama than to the United States, and therefore more apt to take his orders than take a stand against impending doom? We certainly know that Obama's loyalties lie with the Islamists. I believe, Diane, that it was more than possible and highly probable. U.S. military commanders rarely, if ever, speak publicly against the commander-in-chief, but when deep disagreements regarding military operations on the ground present themselves and those military commanders' advice is being ignored by politicians to the detriment of our troops and the mission itself, they show their deep divide with the White House by resigning their positions.
Well, it's very odd, you know, that nobody has resigned, but there was one person. And he wasn't, you know, way up there. But there was one person that did question all of this, and he gets in trouble.
Yeah, he got in big trouble. Look, the fact that nobody in a high position was reassigned or resigned should be enough to launch a deep investigation into why they haven't resigned. But Marine Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller is not part of that upper-level brass, and he did question his superiors regarding the scenario I just put forth. He brought up military senior leaders, including Marine Commandant General David H. Berger, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark A. Milley. And he asked, and I quote, "I'm not saying we need to be in Afghanistan forever, but I am saying, did any of you throw your rank on the table and say, hey, it's a bad idea to evacuate Bagram Airfield, a strategic airbase, before we evacuate everyone? Did anyone do that? And when you didn't think to do that, did anyone raise their hand and say, we completely messed this up?" Unquote. Scheller posed that pointed question on Thursday, August 26, 2021, and was promptly relieved of his duty after 17 years as a U.S. Marine the next day on Friday, the 27th of August, 2021. It sure seems like Lieutenant Colonel Scheller was too close to the truth, and I suspect he may well know more than he's already said. In fact, after being relieved of his duty, Scheller said, quote, "I appreciate the opportunities AITB Command provided. To all the news agencies asking for interviews, I will not be making any statements other than what's on my social platforms until I exit the Marine Corps," unquote. I suspect that both time and Lieutenant Colonel Scheller will tell the tale eventually. So far, the scenario I'm trying or laying out here smells of a conspiracy, but without evidence, it's nothing but a theory. Conspiracy theories become realities when evidence comes into play, and there is evidence in this case. Beginning in early May, U.S. intel sources from the ground in Afghanistan began to brief members of the House and the Senate intel committees of growing threats from the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS in Afghanistan. Indeed, those threat assessments started to present themselves as realities as the buildup of Taliban forces began their march through Afghanistan, taking one province after another. Diane, furthermore, in May, the State Department began to issue warnings to U.S. citizens in Afghanistan to leave, and those warnings became more direct and more urgent in June and in July. Biden's military brass would have been more than aware of those intel reports, and Biden himself should have been well aware of them, but the situation on the ground continued as it was. So was he aware or wasn't he?
No, obviously he was not aware. Not only was he not aware, but he told a bunch of lies to the American public, to the generals, to the Afghan people themselves in the guise of their president. I mean, this whole thing has been just wrong from the very, very beginning. But here it is when you're speaking about the takeover and that it's coming. You have a president that can't see the truth of what's happening? That seems to have been what happened.
I know. It's astonishing. Really, isn't it? I mean, when you think about, look, on July 8th, 2021, Biden engaged with a reporter who asked, quote, "Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?" unquote. Biden responded, "No, it is not." The reporter said, "Why?" Biden said, "Because the Afghan troops have 300,000 well-equipped forces, as well-equipped as any army in the world, and an air force against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable," unquote. Within moments, the reporter then posed this to Biden, quote, "Your own intelligence community has assessed that the Afghan government will likely collapse," unquote. And Biden responded very matter-of-factly, quote, "That is not true. They did not reach that conclusion," unquote. Well, that was either an outright lie by Biden, as Diane said, or he simply was never told that the assessment by his own intel community was that the Afghan government was indeed about to collapse. Adding more fuel to that fire, or more evidence to the scenario, is the fact that when Biden pulled out of the Bagram Air Base, literally in the dark of night, removing the vast majority of our military personnel from Afghanistan in one fell swoop, he also removed all of our on-the-ground in Afghanistan intel personnel at the same time. Unless the goal was to create maximum chaos and maximum devastation to those Americans left behind in Afghanistan, unless the intended goal was to hand Afghanistan over to various Islamist terrorist organizations with Americans, our allies from other nations, and our allies from within Afghanistan who have been providing invaluable assistance for 20 years as hostages, why would you remove our military personnel and our intel personnel from Afghanistan just as those various terror organizations, Diane, were seizing control of a country while leaving for them a treasure trove of military weapons and military technology?
Well, you know, logic alone would dictate that if you don't have military personnel on the ground anywhere, if you don't have proper intel on the ground anywhere, things are not going to work out as you expect that they would work out, and as they should have worked out.
Well, Diane, there you go, using common sense again.
I know.
Yeah, what are you thinking? Look, without the intel, without adequate military personnel on the ground, it was inevitable that the situation would descend into chaos and the deaths of Americans there, and I highly suspect that to prevent Biden's ability to F things up, as Obama had warned, Biden was kept in the dark and fed a steady stream of fake intel or no intel at all so as to facilitate the rapid collapse of Afghanistan and its takeover by Islamist terrorist organizations. American lives be damned. Think about it. When was the last time such a vacuum of power created in the Middle East which led to the rapid downfall of a country complete with the loss of a U.S. embassy and the deaths of Americans? 2012. And in that case, Libyan rebels, also known as Islamist terrorists, were armed with U.S. weapons courtesy of backdoor arms deals engineered via straw men from the Turkish government. Joe Biden was the vice president then, and Obama was the architect of that vacuum of power. The disaster that resulted from it, and the takeover of that country by Islamist terrorist organizations. What has happened in Afghanistan has Obama's stink all over it. But one question remains. Was Biden really handcuffed by the deal President Trump had with the Taliban? No. Absolutely not. That deal came with conditions, and primary among those conditions was for the withdrawal of American from Afghanistan was that the Taliban would have to negotiate a coalition government with the existing Afghan government. The Taliban never did that. They violated the terms of the deal. Say what you will about President Trump, but he drove tough deals, and if his terms were not met, the deal was off. While President Trump wanted out of Afghanistan, he would not have left without the terms of the deal being met, and he would have never left the way Biden did under any circumstances. While there are those who will claim that President Trump's deal with the Taliban was folly, those are by and large the same people who claim the deals he was making with various Arab states and Israel to bring stability to the Middle East were folly. However, those deals were genuine and they've proven to be solid. That's because President Trump left no doubt that peace through strength with the U.S., poised to respond harshly to any violations of the deals, was the teeth necessary to ensure those deals would stand. That is called leading from the front. What happened in Afghanistan, the vacuum of power, the rapid fall of the government and the country, the takeover by Islamist terror organizations, and Biden's so-called over-the-horizon capabilities, should they ever be deemed necessary, is leading from behind. Obama proudly claims to lead from behind. But Joe Biden couldn't lead a one-car parade from any position. Barack Hussein Obama is the wizard, and Joe Biden is the scarecrow wishing he had a brain. And what we have here is nothing more or nothing less than a coup from behind the curtain. I mean, that's all it is.
This is a very well orchestrated.
It is, Diane. And it, like I say, the more we learn on a day-by-day basis, the worse it gets. The clearer the picture becomes, but the worse it gets.
Yeah. And it's getting worse by the day, folks, because there are still Americans trapped there. There are still Taliban allies, real allies. It kind of makes you wonder who all these people were that we took out of there. Because the true allies are saying, you left us behind, you left us behind. Who was on those planes?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. We know they weren't interpreters because now the government's trying to hire interpreters for the people they got out.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that all of them, you know, are part of the terrorist organizations. A lot of them, you know, were families that they had a taste of what life could be like and they want that life again. But I can guarantee that some of the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Taliban tentacles were on that plane, on those planes, I should say.
Oh, I would be shocked if they weren't. In fact, you know, we've heard that they're now that they've gotten them out and they've gotten them to the U.S., they're now vetting over 100 of them. I'll bet you, first of all, look, it's almost impossible to believe the numbers that we're hearing from the government on any of this.
I agree.
Part of that is because they use Common Core math, and the other part of it is they're trying to cover up what they did.
Exactly.
You know, but if they say they're vetting 100 of them that may be tied to terrorism, I'm guessing the number is more likely 10 times that.
Absolutely. No, absolutely no question about it. Look, they lied about how many people they got out. They lied about how many people have been killed. They just lied from the beginning of this all the way to where we are today. Nothing has changed. Americans are left behind, and I believe it's a lot more than 100 they're claiming. Americans are left behind. Afghan true allies have been left behind. Some of our own allies, there were British citizens that still can't get out. This is a disaster. This is not the action of a commander in chief. This is the action of someone who is against us, against what we're doing, and stands to lose if Afghanistan was free. And again, one person and one person alone comes to mind.
Well, let me ask you this, Diane. I can't remember the word, and I'm hoping maybe you can. Okay. Biden called this a success, but he called it a something success. Not a huge success, but he had a very descriptive word that he used.
Wasn't it ultimate success or something along those lines?
Yeah, something along those. I don't think ultimate was it.
Extraordinary. This was an extraordinary success.
That's it. That's the word. Extraordinary. Called it an extraordinary success. Okay, you look at everything that happened, right? You look at everything that continues to happen, right? The only way this could be an extraordinary success is if it was an extraordinary success for our enemies.
And it was.
Okay.
They've got American weapons. They've got the know-how, and they're going to use them because reports are coming out that they're using it against Afghans who helped the U.S. And there's some reports that a few Americans are being held hostage at the airport, that two plane loads with American citizens are not being allowed to leave.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter all over again, right?
It's Jimmy Carter on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, who in this country would call this an extraordinary success? Okay. Obama. Mm-hmm. He armed the Islamists in Libya, in Benghazi. We lost Americans. We lost an embassy. The country fell, right? And he was leading from behind. He gave rise to ISIS. Okay, we've seen him coddle the Islamists and the Islamist regimes over and over again. He signed that damn nuclear deal with Iran, for God's sakes. You know, you look at all the things that Obama has called a success. Why wouldn't he call this a success?
Well, you know something, there's an interesting play on words here, and I know it's word semantics, but everybody keeps saying leading from behind. No, what it actually is stabbing America in the back from behind.
Well, that's right. You can't get to America's back unless you're in the back of the line.
Right.
You know, so you lead from behind with a knife.
It's semantics, but it's just, you know, a little something.
But it's true. It is what it is. You're right. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, folks, you can get this commentary, and I hope you do, two different places, always at thenationalpatriot.com and always at rspradio1.com. Okay? You get the link. You share this everywhere. Get the truth out there. Now, I'm going to continue this article next Tuesday. Okay. Mm-hmm. But what you're going to get from me next Tuesday is a continuation of this with more stuff that has come out this week that I've already assembled into an article. Diane next week is going back into the COVID, and for damn good reason, because there's truth there you need to hear too.
big truth, folks.
You know, big it just kind of is what it is. You know, we're trying to cover everything else too, but this Friday, it's all about 9/11 because 9/11, the anniversary, 20 years, is Saturday. So our show this Friday is 100% dedicated to what happened 20 years ago, what's happened in the 20 years since, and our own personal remembrances of that horrible day.
Right, and I can't believe it's 20 years already.
You know, I can't either. It just, when something like that happens, the impressions of it are just ingrained in your memory, and they're not in the back, they're in the front.
Oh, yeah. I could close my eyes, and it seems like it just happened.
I think back on that particular day, and, you know, it's not just when the yearly anniversary of it comes about. I catch myself thinking about that day and where I was and what I was doing. I catch myself thinking about that a lot over the past 20 years.
Oh, yeah, because it's part of basically our generation. This is an integral part of our generation. We were attacked on American soil by an enemy that we knew were the enemy, but nobody did anything to stop them. If Bill Clinton had done something after the first attack on the World Trade Center, those people would be alive today.
You know, it's
all
fun.
People sold us out.
They did. It's funny to me, in a way, that you bring up, you know, as part of our generation. I was just thinking earlier today that kids that are in high school today, this happened before they were born.
Right. Right. It's you just know? In the history books before the woke culture takes it out of even the history books.
You know, it's you think about 20 years, you know. Kids in high school today, they weren't even around. They weren't even thought of when this actually took place. They've heard about it, you know. And I think, you know, I think back to my grandmother. You know, my grandmother lived to be 97 years old. She came to Nebraska in a covered wagon in the late 1800s, and she lived long enough to watch Men on the Moon, right?
That's amazing.
And yeah. I'm nowhere near that age, you know?
No.
But I think back and I think, man, you know, these kids that we see today, kids in college today, kids in high school today, they don't remember the moon landing. They don't remember 9/11. They don't remember any of that stuff.
Well, you know, history is being taken away, too, as things are being taken out of the history books. You know, these people are trying to erase the past. But guess what? As long as there's one person alive to tell it, you're not erasing it. And we got to keep telling these stories. We got to keep reminding people of 9/11. We got to keep reminding people of Benghazi. We got to keep reminding people of elections stolen. We can't let them erase America's history. And that includes slavery. It was part of our history. Get over it.
Well, and we can't let them forget about the Mu variant.
Oh, definitely not. By
the way, in the minute or so that we've got left on the show tonight, can I just tell you an interesting factoid about the Mu variant?
Absolutely.
It has now been found in 49 states.
Yes, and 137 cases were found in California.
Do you know the one state they have not found the Mu variant?
Nebraska?
Nebraska.
It'll come there.
Well, yeah, but we get everything eventually. Next week, we're getting electricity.
You know, that's not such a bad thing, right?
Maybe someday we'll have paved roads and indoor toilets and everything. But yeah, up to today, so far, no cases of the moo variant in the Husker state. And we got more cows that moo here than anywhere else. So
that's true.
I don't know.
But you notice when one variant, you know, dies down, suddenly another one appears. There's one that they're calling a doomsday variant. I'm just waiting for that to surface about a month before the 2022 elections.
I think they're going to hold on to the doomsday one till a couple of months ahead of the 2024 election. I think there'll be enough variants.
Then they'll have the super-duper doomsday virus.
Well, that could be. There's going to be plenty of variants getting us all through the next couple of election cycles. We know
that's
that.
That's true. That's
we
true.
Know that.
And I even talk about that in my article next week in relating to the jabs.
Folks, we want to thank you for being a part of the show tonight. If you missed any part of it, rspradio1.com tomorrow morning. There we will be under the podcast button. But with that, Diane, we've run out of time tonight.
Yes, we have. So I will say nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday. That's right, the 9/11 tribute show. Bye-bye.
We can work together with Russia, for example, in Libya. We should be opening where we can work together.